Music, thoughts, hopes, and dreams. Four terrific ingredients for the East Coast's latest audio offering, with singer-songwriter Pamela Sue Mann and Alex Lefchuk opening an audacious audio assembly of talent for New York. Real talk.
Judy Collins, Pamela Sue Mann, Donna Lewis, and Joe Jackson. I mean, any one of those is just a genius musician in their own right. But if you've got a top-class drummer, percussionist, programmer as well, well, clearly you're doing good stuff. And we are delighted to actually welcome, again, it's a kind of joint midweek drive, come New York Real Talk, making his debut on the production today. Thanks to Pamela Sue Mann, who's also with us. We've got Doug Yowell. How are you, Doug?
Fine. Great. Thank you so much. That was a heck of an introduction. None of it's true, of course. I don't actually play drums. I collect them.
Well, you know, this is what we expect. You know, drummers have got their own way ever since Animal and the Muppet Show. I've always felt that drummers do their own thing.
I've tried to break that stigma, but I can't do it. You know, when I start playing, the hair goes wild. It turns orange. The eyes get really big. My mouth just turns into Muppet mouth.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It could be worse, Doug. You could turn into Jay Osmond. You could start playing One Bad Apple and doing percussion on that. So there you go. Pamela, as we can hear, obviously Doug is in a wonderful echo chamber. It's phenomenal.
I wish I could take it off for you. I'm looking to see why that would be. It could be here. Mm. Let me see.
It's extraordinary, but it's nice, it's fun, etc. Anyway, Pamela Sue Mann, how are you?
I'm good. There's something in the air. Somebody just told me that Mercury went out of retrograde, but it must have gone into something else because
it's gone into Doug Yowell's studio. That's where it's gone. Obviously,
I think it's gone. Did I get rid of it? Did I get rid of it?
Yes, you have. Yes.
Okay. Man, you look
impressive
fantastic.
Though it was, Doug. I mean, I did feel as though we had one of the gods of music in New York actually sharing with us with that wonderful echo chamber.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why it was on there, but...
it was a lovely, dramatic entrance, yeah. Doug.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And Lord knows, we've waited long enough to get Doug on the program. So
I know, I'm
to
sorry
have a bit
about
of,
that.
Bit of impetus on that side of things. Well, before we go into the awesome career that you actually had and various other things, I have to say that I have mentioned both your name and Pamela's name to one of my students, Lucy Mills, who couldn't join us today. But Lucy is doing for her dissertation an overview on how impactful the music of the Beatles actually was, is, and continues to be. And I was struck, Doug, by your feeling when you went to work, obviously, with Suzanne Vega in Abbey Road, and the comments that you actually made about that. Is there still, I mean, obviously we could talk about Richard Starkey, Ringo Starr, etc.
Yeah.
But in terms of the thing, do you still get that sort of impact? Because again, Pamela's far too young to remember the Beatles. I wasn't around at their well, you are, Pamela, let's face it. You know, that's about it. I recall them, but I wasn't really there at their heyday. Likewise yourself, Doug, but do they still resonate here in the 21st century?
Oh, I think more than ever. It was such a unique combination to have. I mean, there were five originally, but the four remaining, the amount of work they did at the young age they were in Hamburg, just that alone. I had a chance dinner with Jerry Leonard Pamp's husband in Prague, and this fellow was sitting across from me. He was an older gentleman. He was a graphic artist, and he knew far too much about the Beatles. And he was from Hamburg. And the more he got into conversation, I realized it was Klaus Voormann. And he was speaking about that time. And so to hear it from him and understand, these guys were doing like five sets a night, honing their craft. You know, they were so ready to perform, but also had spent the amount of hours gelling as people and being able to do it at such a high level at such a young age. And then you look at the body of material they turned out, and it's beyond extraordinary. It's the perfect combination at the perfect time in history. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again. There's not a chance that I'm, you know, at some point on a recording session, somebody is going to say, yeah, I think it needs sort of a Ringo fill, which is interesting because he's left-handed and he plays righty. I'm left-handed and I play righty. So I understood that he was leading with the left hand, but it wasn't until I did a show in New York with an artist opening for him that I got to sit behind him and watch how he played and how he leaned into the feel. And it's so him. It's unmistakable. When you hear it, you know exactly who it is. And I think it's the same, you know, if you hear that style guitar, you think of George Harrison or the way Paul McCartney played bass. Yes, I think they're more relevant than ever. I think people are still referencing all that material. And I think everybody's dying to see this lost 57 hours of footage that's coming out. Yeah, so I think so.
Yeah, I mean, and Pamela, do you share that kind of feeling with respect to the legacy, so to speak? I mean, obviously, the two of them are still with us from that point of view. Has it impacted your own musical career and journey?
Well, absolutely. Fundamentally, I think that I'm not going to be able to say it as eloquently as Doug, or as educatedly. However, you know, going to Berkeley. And studying music. There was a class we took called History of Rock. And believe it or not, it was a big lecture class at the Berklee Performance Center, which I am certain that Doug has performed in. And they went through the canon, the history of rock as such. You know, the Beatles are like Stonehenge. You know, they are absolutely fundamentally formative. There was a shift. The shift happening, and they represented rock and roll. You know, it was a zeitgeist, and they were like the comet blazing through it. So absolutely, and from a songwriting standpoint, you know, Beatles song form and you have such great songwriters together competing, egging each other on and pushing each other on. You've got some of the best songwriting ever with the Beatles.
Curious metaphor, of course, though, when you say the Beatles like Stonehenge, surely that should be the Rolling Stones. I'm just saying, it's just a line there. But Alex, anyway.
I have to say, in agreeing with what Pam said, I think if they represented anything at the time, obviously they started off super pop, but I think the one lasting piece that we all get from the Beatles was how far they were able to take the imagination. By the time it got to Sgt. Pepper's, they were experimenting in ways that even the technology had to be formed around. They didn't really understand how, you know, George Martin had to go through all these iterations to figure out how can we do this. I was close friends with his son, and he explained quite a lot about what that time was. And I think that may be some of the greatest part. Of course, what Pam said is true, that the songwriting is, it's so simple and yet it's so beautiful, and it's not simple in a way. The chord changes, the melodies, but their imagination, I think, opened up that imagination, endless possibility. Nobody was really doing anything like that. There weren't even ways to record that way, but they invented that.
army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look, having read the
Well, you can do Sergeant Pepper on 8 tracks, then you can do virtually anything, really, which is our whole new world. But then again, I do share my birthday with George Martin, I believe, so we're both sort of Capricorn folk. It's just my bye. Let's move on. We're here to talk about your good self, Doug. That's the important thing. And as I said, on the DougYewell.com website, we've got drummer, percussionist, programmer. I think it's worth saying programmer. That doesn't necessarily mean that you actually schedule things in. It's presumably something to do with the actual coordination of the computer technology that puts things into place. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I am way into the technology, very much, but in very various forms. There are various ways to do this. So people think of programming, they think of a drum machine, typically, but that isn't the way I use programming. I like to record acoustic things and treat them in ways that are very atmospheric, and they become maybe part of a loop that I might use. This set of drums behind me is like a vast synthesizer world on its own. And then, you know, with someone like Joe Jackson or Donna Lewis, we run quite a lot of audio through a laptop And that is manually triggered as we're going. So that was something I spent time wanting to really get good at, was if I had a pad next to me that I could trigger sound, 16 different pads, I could play and figure that out as I was going. And then each artist sort of has varying degrees of what they want live. Joe has a concept of how the show is going to start and end. And the last tour, it started off stage before I entered the stage. I had to have multiple setups where I could trigger the beginning of the show, how the show was going to go as we were going, and how the show was going to end. So everybody requires something different. And in a lot of ways, it makes me come up with things that I would never otherwise do. Sometimes they ask something that seems completely impossible, but you only have one answer when they say, is this possible? You say yes. And then you figure it out. That's what I do.
Can do philosophy, yeah. Always important. Yeah. Joe Jackson, stepping out, it's different for girls. Clearly classics that still connect with us across the years and so on. Do you have any particular favorites yourself in terms of, I mean, obviously anything that features yourself on drums goes without saying, but in terms of the actual material that they've produced, I mean, I was fascinated to find that you've worked with Judy Collins, and obviously Both Sides Now is the kind of go-to I always tend to think about with Judy, but there's so many other things that she's done. Who Knows Where the Time Goes, another classic, lots of other areas within that. Are there sort of any favorites that you've got that maybe we can actually insert into the post-production for this little piece?
I think Joe Jackson, Another World, is a fantastic song. I love that track. I think it's so beautiful. It's very challenging because it's multiple drum parts that needed to be combined in order to make it work. So I think that is so much, it's so much fun to play, and it's such a staple in the show.
Thank you.
I think it's really important as a song for him. The thing about Joe is, and I think this song sort of represents it, he got into different styles of music. You know, he started out more punk. Then he started introducing Latin. He introduced jazz. So whatever direction he went in, he had a concept. And Another World sort of is the merging of that in a lot of ways. So that was a really fun song to play. Ode to Joy is another fantastic song of his. None of which
with Van Beethoven, of course, because he had the first Ode to Joy, really.
It alludes to that, so it's there. Yeah.
And of course, Ludwig, he was great until he lost his hearing, but he still kept going after that as well. It's just an important side of things. Pamela, before we get too surreal with respect to this, any questions you'd like to put into Doug from your own perspective?
I'd like to add on before I ask the question, which will pop into my head in a moment, we had the privilege of seeing Doug with Joe Jackson. Now, we've known Doug. I actually met Doug before Jerry. Like, we've been friends for such a long time, and it's been such a joy to watch him grow and really become like one of the top drummers in the world, and I don't say that lightly. It's absolutely true. And you know, when we saw him with Joe Jackson, I was so proud, if you could say that, just to know Doug and to watch his ascent and to understand why. You know, the quote from Jean Cocteau: "Art is not a pastime; it's a priesthood." Doug has taken that on since he was a child. You know, he has made his art, his drumming, his creating a priesthood, and he's, you know, I think hopefully he'll be on tour with Joe Jackson, that you must go out and experience that. As far as questions go, you know, as I said, like, it's really creepy to interview your friends. So
it's not. We're always interviewing each other, Pamela. It's just part and parcel of the whole thing. Don't think of it as an interviewer feature. I mean, we don't have electric buzzers to actually press if they get the wrong answer.
Fantastic. I might have something here to do that.
Oh.
You know, part of the reason why I'm so thrilled that we do this, Alex, is that, you know, it gives me the opportunity to interview my friends and not be creepy and ask questions that might not come up, you know, when we're busy running Doug over with a car and things like that. But basically, I was just wondering for you, I know because I have a little bit of insight into it as a friend, but over the past few years, to get into that position where you've been spending all of your time and your life in this priesthood of drumming, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're playing with fantastic, phenomenal people, and then the Joe Jackson gig comes along and you nail that, and then you're a part of that world. And then you're adding on to these dimensions, you're accreting onto your planet, and you're just, to me, I felt like you had arrived. Now, you never really arrived, right? But I just would like to ask you, Doug, what that feels like, or if you even feel that, when things feel like they're clicking into place and here you are, all your life you've been preparing for this thing, and then you know in your mind, you are there, this is your life, this is all you'll ever do, and you're doing it on such a high level.
Well, in terms of the priesthood, I first want to say, bless you, my child. Actually, it's a beautiful question, and I can tell you, Pam, the thing that changed, I think, for me personally was I was constantly asked to do maybe what was on previous artists' records. Then I started to make the records with those artists. And along the way, I got very comfortable with things that I was gravitating toward. And Jerry is a great example. Jerry's such an atmospheric genius that between him and Duncan Sheik, I wanted to do that on drums. It doesn't really make sense. Jerry can do that with incredible amounts of length to the note and make it swim around. But I had to find a way to do it with a staccato instrument. And those guys influenced me so deeply that I was able to find that world. So that was part of it. I was constantly in a morphing process. And I think the idea of arriving is really more about comfort and relaxation. Once that settled inside me and I felt completely relaxed, I remember Joe asking me, he said, you don't get nervous before you play. I said, no, I cannot wait to go out and present this show to those. Now I can't wait. Of course, you know, for years I did, but I think it comes from really ultimately letting go. And you realize a couple of things. One, everything that I do, everything that you hear come out of me is actually a massive amalgam of everybody that ever supported me, like yourself, loved me, used me on sessions, taught me, mentored me, you know, encouraged me from the time that I was three. So when I think of the sound that comes out now, it is the sum of all those years and relaxing into the idea that there is some higher force. If you just relax and put the antenna up, the signal is going to pass through. And at this point, I prepare so hard. You know, Joe starts the tour March 13th in Ireland. I started preparing for the tour September 1st. And I think that's such a part of it. How many hours does it take to master something? Whether we're talking about an instrument or a language or a tour, it doesn't really matter. It comes down to what is the most relaxed you can actually do something? And how far can you take that relaxation? And can you take that up to whatever level you need it to? And so that's the idea of the preparation. And I think that is part of the comfort. So when people ask me to go do this, it's so easy because I know how hard I'm going to prepare. And I know where that's going to travel inside me. It's like a signal path. You keep mastering it, mastering it, mastering it until it just becomes you. You know, I wouldn't say anymore, you know, you don't play a groove. You have to become the groove. The songs have to become you. And once that changed for me, everything changed. Now it's just a no-brainer.
We clearly have this whole notion of, Doug, your first book will have to be Zen and the Art of Percussion, because I think it's there. Forget motorcycle maintenance.
Well, I mean, to be honest, Alex, I spend now between 6 and 8 hours a day practicing. Mm. And it all comes down to this concept that I teach, and it is about letting go. Letting go to the ultimate degree. In drums, if you want to take something up to a certain speed, it has to start at the most relaxed point. You play your best. I had the great fortune of having Steve Gadd here in my place to record, and I've never sat that close to him to watch him play. He played so light and so effortless, and he really taught me the microphones do all the work. You be the way you want to be, and let the technology capture that. It's not the other way around. That changed a lot for me. That was a couple of years ago. That changed so much. So I think it's, you know, it's you become the aesthetic that you keep traveling on the journey inwardly. It's really a journey inside that is meshing with the outside world. And it just, you lose where it begins and ends, and it just becomes one thing, I think. I mean, look at Pam. If you look at her and you look at the color and you look at her aesthetic, that is someone who realized exactly that. Like, this is what you see is how she feels. Am I right, Pam?
I feel very pink.
I love it to death. With that background, I mean, this is like, you know, I'm in my little drum box, and it's like a movie set.
Well, it's interesting, Doug, and what you're saying, because Doug and I have had the most wonderful conversations throughout the years about this sort of thing. Not specifically in terms of his drumming so much, but just in the way philosophically, you know, we're in the world. And something struck me as you were speaking, that it really is a combination of being so prepared, and you have this ethos, and Jerry has this ethos, and the greatest artists I know all share this ethos, constantly preparing, constantly learning, constantly refining. The discipline is constantly there. And at the same time, you're in the moment. So when you're in the moment, you're allowing all of this education. And, you know, Alex his priesthood is education. And there's so much that goes in. And then when it's your moment to share it, you have so much to say because you haven't just been, you know, flicking channels on the telly your whole life and tuning out. You've been actually tuning into everything.
So yeah.
It's both things. It's like the moment of such preparation and then being in the moment.
You know, it's a great point. And Alex mentioned the word Zen. I mean, you know, Cherry is a practicing Buddhist. I've been a practicing Buddhist for a very long time. And the idea of being present while I'm here with you, this is the only important thing in my life, the time that we spend together. It really, truly is. And when we finish here and I go do the next thing, it is the most important thing in my life. If, you know, when I was younger too, Pam, you saw me go through the stage where I was like working with tons of artists and running all over New York. And first of all, that doesn't exist anymore. And maybe that's a great thing. And then we went through, nobody saw each other for a year and a half. And it slowed things down to such a degree that what we appreciate and what we give time to and what comes back is so rewarding, ultimately. And it's in that patience or that relaxation that we can absorb, enjoy, and actually do that thing. You know, it's like they say, if you're, for people who are on the run and they eat while they're driving, they're both not eating nor driving. It's the, you know, it's that. It's like, how could the food be absorbed in a beautiful way, appreciating the sun and the rain and the soil and everything while you're driving? And how great is your driving while you're eating?
And it's potentially dangerous to other drivers as well. So we would never encourage people to eat at the wheel. So it's very, very important.
Yeah.
But yes, that living in the constant now, the perpetual now, and living in the moment is something which we keep coming back to and spiraling forward in all sorts of ways, which ties in with Pam's line about educare leading out the inner development of the individual. This piece is going to be followed by an item I did earlier with, of course, New Orleans, in which I gave a due name check to yourself, Pamela. I don't know if you managed to have a chance to listen to it as yet. But clearly New Orleans were making a big play of the fact that they're really pushing the music festival. This is obviously for 2022. They've had one, obviously, in October. Do you think, I mean, you've mentioned obviously you're joining Jerry on tour, things looking good. Having said that, this side of the Atlantic in Britain, we listened to the various folks saying, yeah, well, we've got a plan B. We might have to go to that. So we might have to go to this. COVID might mutate. We've got the COVID descendant, the Delta descendant now, as opposed to the Delta variant. Do you think, again, it's a case of we need to obviously factor that in to all of our experiences now? I mean, from your live performances, is that something which, Doug, you think this is something which can be a blessing and it can be a challenge at the same time?
First of all, I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think I had the Delta before this variant, and having been vaccinated, I was very sick. But ultimately, the antibodies take hold, and we're seeing this happen all over the world. The variants may be more contagious, but they may be less severe. That happens. You know, the job of the virus is to keep going. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get stronger. And I think the kinds of protocols that are put in place, I've been going back and forth to Europe to work with Sharon Kaur, and I can't do that without a vaccination. Nobody can. You can't get on a plane. You can't enter the country. You can't really get around. You know, you can't go to a restaurant in New York without showing a real vaccination. So the more that becomes part of the world, we're going to see the changes. Now, in terms of touring, what I'm noticing is that I think coming up with Joe, for instance, there will be no before or after show with guests. We will go do the show mainly so that we can keep bringing the show to audiences. If someone in the crew or the band were to test positive, it's a 10-day quarantine. It shuts everything down. Maybe you let the crew member go and get someone to fill in. You can't really do that in the band. So I think I see that with a lot of tours. James Taylor, you know, I saw St. Vincent recently. It's the same. You don't go backstage. There's no before or after. So it puts the most important thing forward, which is the experience of the artists, the band, the audience. and what that really is. And I think if those things are respected, it is absolutely going to keep moving forward. I don't think we're going to need a plan B. Honestly, I don't think so. I don't see that happening.
Anyway,
I think
Eminem
more and more
did Plan B a few years ago, and it wasn't a great album. So, you know, just leave it on that, basically. The into 8 Mile, another such aspect. So there we are. Pamela, back to yourself again. Any sort of comments or observations about New Orleans or anything else you'd like to raise?
Well, you know, I must say I've never been to New Orleans.
Really?
No, I know Jerry's never taken me there.
You would
so
love it.
So much music.
You would love it.
Yeah, I really want to go. Someday I'll go for certain. I wanted to ask you, Doug, about, I'm sure it's on the website and everything, but will you be touring in the U.S. anytime soon as well?
Yes. In fact, we're going to start March 13th in Ireland with Joe and Carrie all through Europe until April 30. And then we're off for 10 days. And then I think starting May 11th to like June 27, it'll be U.S. and Canada.
Ooh,
there's other artists looming, but I can't mention anything until it's solid. But it's going to be a very busy year. I know the beginning of the year is Sharon Kaur in Europe, January into right up to my rehearsals with Joe, and then it flips over to Joe. But
wow.
But we're definitely going to do that. You know, Pam, you made me think of something when you said about the education. This is an offshoot, but it goes back to preparing. I had to do a live benefit in New York, and it was Will Lee. He's one of the greatest, most legendary musicians on the planet. He's played with everyone under the sun. And he is the musical director for these kinds of events. And so it was like a 20-piece band, 4 background singers, you know, whatever it was, 8 horns and loads of musicians. And the artists were going to be Betty Levette, Darlene Love, Elvis Costello, Bonnie Raitt, all these incredible people. And of course, I was preparing in advance, but it wasn't just about preparing in advance. I was really thinking about what it must have been like for Bonnie Raitt to start out when she did, to be a female who really, really had immense talent singing and playing and songwriting. And going up against the man's world where, you know, maybe they wanted to see her in short skirts instead of pants. And she stayed her course to be who she was. And I read quite a bit about all the struggles and, you know, the things that come with it, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever. I don't remember exactly in her case, but I remember at the time doing so much research, because when I got in the room with her, it wasn't just about the music. It was about honoring this human being who went through so much to get to where she got to. That was going to be a part of the music as much as what was written on the page. I think in terms of education, that's a really important thing to do. I want to know a lot of times about who the artist is. What is the background? What are the songs about? What does this lyric pertain to? It doesn't have to be something so personal that they have to reveal it. Maybe they can just sum it up or tell me what the tension is. But that kind of education, I think, is actually super important.
We had a selection from Joe Jackson earlier. From your own perspective, Doug, if we were to ask you, favorites can always be a difficult question because, they're so difficult to actually choose from. But do you have any particular sort of music you'd like us to specifically sort of wrap up this particular sequence of New York Real Talk with?
Do you have his last record, Fool? Yeah, there's a song on there called Big Black Cloud, and I make my background singing debut there. Super high, but the song is super powerful. And the cool thing to know about that record is that we toured for a month to get all the new material together. He didn't want to go in, and he wanted to feel like we'd been living inside those songs. And we were going to find a studio wherever the tour ended. That's where we find the studio. We ended in Boise, Idaho.
dare not go. Someday, beer and sauerkraut, take you to the park, but the weatherman shouts, no, no, just no. Save us from the big black cloud.
Save us from the big black cloud.
Shout it out, not too loud.
Shout it out, shout it out, shout it out.
Found the studio, and the next morning 10 a.m we cut that record. All the basic tracks were primarily live. We never did more than two takes of anything. It was like first take, maybe second take. So from that perspective, I think you'll appreciate it.
Excellent. It's been awesome just sharing some thoughts and magical sort of moments here from all sorts of other areas. Presumably Doug Yowell, YOWELL.com is the best place for people to actually locate you on the web. Is that correct?
Yes, it's actually Yowell, but you can pronounce it however you like. Yeah,
Yowell is fine. It's tomato, tomato. Yowell, yeah, right. Yowell, yeah. Will be fine. It'll be fine.
Aluminium.
They'll there you go. Aluminum. You know? Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex, it's such a pleasure. I'm so grateful you asked me, and I'm thrilled Pam was on with us. That is fantastic. First thing I'm going to do is call her as soon as we finish.
The bottom line, Doug, without Pamela Sue Mann, no New York Real Talk. I mean, she is basically the voice of New York. I mean, this is the way forward, and you know, it's just going to take a little time to actually get people to realize that, but it's going to happen inevitably. So there you go. Doug, huge thanks. By the way, do you have a favorite Beatles song?
Gosh, A Day in the Life, maybe.
Yeah, I had a feeling you might be going down the aspects of that sort of set of excellent stuff. You saw the news today, oh boy, now they know how many holes it takes to fill the Albert Hall. Critical aspects, really.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. That song is just so unique. The way it comes in and goes out, it's just incredible.
So, Pamela, I think we should put Doug through those last two questions. What say you? I'll do one, you do the other. Doug, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Have I had an interesting Zoomer? Here, you mean? Recently, yes, Peter Erskine. He was my drum teacher when I was 16. Is that what you mean?
No, it's just like, has it been good for you? It's like a smiley face. It's just, were you happy with the last 20 minutes or so with us?
I can't believe it's ending, to be honest. I'm a little shocked and horrified and a bit insulted. But you know what? That's fine. It's fine. I have other things to do. There's plastic bags that need to be put inside other plastic bags in case I need them.
It's a whole new world in the artist's work of plastic bags. So, Pamela, would you like to throw the second question in, please?
Would you please, without us having to pay you a lot of money, perhaps come and join us again? Or Alex, without me? Or Jerry?
Anytime. Anytime.
Excellent.
Anytime.
I just want to thank you so much for...
Are you kidding? Thank you for making this possible. I'm sorry I had to put it off. I was recording last week and we missed
the best things
chance.
Are worth waiting for, Doug. And
thank
clearly
you, Alex. Really, thank you. Thank you for doing the homework. I so appreciate that. And yes, you're more than welcome to stay in touch. There's always something new happening.
And I can wrap up by saying Joe Jackson is fortunate to have you with his back, basically.
Thank you so much.
Good stuff. Thank you.
I feel so lucky.
When you're actually dealing with music festivals, you might have thought, well, COVID's put paid to all of that, hasn't it? I mean, it's all gone, but no, proving that there is hope and indeed joy to be found in New Orleans, 300 shows in 35 music venues. That's the ambitious target, which is going to be achieved in New Orleans this October, because live music is back. And to talk us through this, we're delighted to welcome the awesome spokesperson extraordinaire, the founder indeed of SigFest Events. It's Sig Greenbaum. How are you, Sig?
Hello, that was the most awesome introduction ever. Thank you so much.
Well, Sig, it's great to connect with your good self. Now, share with us this fantastic thing. I mean, obviously, the border situation is changing. Although, having said that, COVID, it's been one heck of an 18 months. It's still out there. How are you coping? What was the dream of putting this wonderful festival together?
Well, the important thing is it was a festival inside venues, 35 venues across New Orleans. And it was an immediate reaction to the last 18 months, but specifically once Jazz Fest, which is an annual pilgrimage in New Orleans, canceled for October after moving from the spring, I felt that we needed to do something to help the music venues, which make it so much of their year is based on those night shows that happen around Jazz Fest and other festivals. And it just seemed like something needed to happen to protect the venues, the musicians, and the gig economy that's around it. And it, you know, we got the support of New Orleans and Company, and it took off from there. And we also got the support of venues and great venue owners like the great Stanton Moore, who's on the phone with us too.
Which is fantastic. We have a weekly show with Pamela Sue Mann in New York, which is New York Real Talk. And Pamela's a musician as well. She's been obviously taking small steps into the live music scene. This one is diving in with a vengeance though, isn't it?
It is. We put this together in 17 days. We went from a crazy idea in the airport at 6 a.m. to a phone call with Stanton, with Tipitina's and all the other venues in New Orleans in 24 hours. And 17 days later, we were announcing this incredible initiative.
It's like the jazz equivalent of let's put the show on right here. I mean, Mickey Rooney would have been proud of you. It's fantastic. New Orleans has actually got a wonderful history when it comes to jazz, when it comes to Mardi Gras, when it comes to all manner of other bits and pieces. Is that one of the sort of aspects where you mentioned the gig economy, that actually this is something which inevitably it was going to happen and manifest because you're just so darn creative down there?
New Orleanians support New Orleanians, and they support it with a ton of creativity. There was a sinkhole in the middle of the city last year, and it became Sinkhole de Mayo. There was a parade around it, and that's how New Orleanians roll.
See, there was, I think it was all about Scott Bakula and NCIS New Orleans, but obviously there's more to it than that, clearly, for that point of view. Okay, this is going out, obviously, primarily for a British audience. They might be thinking about going to the States. Why should they actually choose to come to this festival as soon as they can?
Well, the festival happened last week and we just wrapped up, so now we're looking at 2022. So the great thing is direct flight on British Airways, borders are opening up. New Orleans is doing live music safe and in clubs all over the city nightly. So when we do this again in October or even next week, you should come and enjoy live music like you can't find anywhere else.
I was going to say, in terms of the time system, we just have to make plans on that side of things. I mean, there's COP26, there's all sorts of things there, but obviously this is going to be much more musical. It is, as you said, a coalition between nightclubs and so on. Was that something which was easy to arrange, or was it just a case of once they knew that you were behind it, SIG, it was a done deal?
Well, I will defer to Stanton because he's a musician and a club owner. And I will just say it was incredibly impressive how quickly people rallied around this idea. But as a club owner, Tipitina's, I think Stanton can give that view of how we did this coalition.
You mentioned him. Let's bring in our ace drummer from indeed the New Orleans jam band Galactic. It's Stanton Moore. How are you, Stanton?
Doing great, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. So what Sig was saying there, is it just a case of, yeah, no worries. When you get New Orleans and musicians together, we're going to work.
It was really a no-brainer. I was approached by Ben Jaffe of Preservation Hall, and he said, hey, man, can you get on the phone? And we talked briefly, and he said, we have this idea, and New Orleans and company are going to get behind it. And they had the idea to bring in SIG. And we all in the music community know SIG from his work with other festivals, and his reputation precedes him. So when we knew that SIG was leading the helm and helping us promote these shows, a lot of the shows were already booked and in place because we were preparing for the Jazz Fest that got canceled. So a lot of the legwork was done, but then SIG said, look, we're going to bring in marketing from New Orleans and Company. SIG had the name Nola by Nola. And once he said, look, I'm going to lead the charge. You guys do what you do. We're going to do what we do. And we're going to make this thing spectacular. And it was, from my perspective, it was unbelievably spectacular to play. I play with a band called Galactic in a club that we own called Tipitina's. And we had a Saturday night sold out. The next week, a Saturday night sold out. But in between, one of my side projects called Dragon Smoke with Ivan Neville on keys, on a Tuesday night, we had a close to sold out show. So we had 750 people in Tipitina's on a Tuesday night in the middle of October. I can't tell you how wonderful that feels on a spiritual level, on a musical level, and on an economical level.
Sig, you clearly are a superstar. And I'm pleased that Stanton actually said that it was Nola by Nola. I wasn't sure whether it was Nola squared. Was it Nola times Nola, Nola x Nola? And the official line is Nola by Nola. Is that right?
All names are acceptable, but the official name is Nola by Nola.
Excellent. So let's just look ahead briefly to 2022. People are listening to this and they say, right, I need to be part of this with or without my mask and COVID vaccine passport and all the rest of bits and pieces. How can they sign up? Where's the web address? Where should they go?
NewOrleans.com. Also, NolaXNola.com will take you to it also. And we're making plans for 2022 even as we speak. It'll take place in October. And more details to follow really soon.
It's going to be awesome. Sig, it's been tremendous connecting with your good self across the ocean through all sorts of other marvelous things, proving that there is life. And Stanton, great connecting with your good self, Galactic, obviously. Have any thoughts about calling yourselves Cosmos or Andromeda or Galaxy? Has it always been Galactic, basically?
It was a little bit expanded earlier, but it's been Galactic for over 25 years.
I mean, I was thinking, because obviously Jefferson Airplane started off as an airplane, then became Starship. It went all over the place, really. So right. I thought you'd go out to multiverse before too long. You know, it's great.
Right. You know, it's taking us this long just to get people to recognize Galactic. So I think we're going to stick with that.
Stanton Moore, ace drummer from Galactic, of course, and Sig Greenbaum, founder of Sig Fest Events. Huge thanks, and keep up the excellent work, gentlemen.